be a part of this historic effort and add your contribution today. Don't wait. Go to uhurunews.com today and show your support for the growing organized African resistance sweeping the continent and around the world. Up next on Africa Live, we bring you a rebroadcast of an interview that Inyabinga di Zimbabwe did with Efia in Mwangaza about her work with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee's Atlanta Project that formulated the Black Power demand of the 1960s in the U.S. Uhuru.
Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live. Africa Live.
Welcome to Africa Live here on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Inyabinga Zimbabwe, and today we're going to continue our look at the Democratic Republic of Congo, where elections just recently happened. that continue the tradition of the theft of elections, illegitimate elections that have been the case ever since the imperialists assassinated Patrice Lumumba, the DRC's first and only democratically elected president. So we're going to continue to take a look at the DRC and mobilizations that have been happening around the world in anticipation of and subsequent to the election there. We will take a listen to some interviews done with ASI organizers on the ground at some of these mobilizations, beginning with an interview done last week with Luwesi Kinshasa, the Secretary General of the African Socialist International.
And the people are the makers of history. But what we want to say is that we want to go to the roots of the problem. The root of the problem is that the election was not stolen in November 2011. It was stolen in September 1960, when Lumumba was the prime minister.
Okay.
That's when the problem started. That's what we need to go back to. So we need to tell the people, hey, go to the roots of the problem so we can solve it once for all. And we say the only way we can solve it is to bring the people to revolutionary consciousness. Because imperialism will always stand for compromise, or always stand for neocolonialism. But the masses will have nothing to do in such compromise.
Okay.
So we say revolution. Revolution, but that revolution has to be a worldwide African revolution. You want to unite the whole African world to unite what's happening in the Congo and develop our consciousness to one Africa, one revolution. It might happen in the Congo right now. Let's make it happen in the Congo.
Uhuru. Right?
All of us are part of it. Wherever we are part of the same revolution.
Uhuru. Uhuru. Just before you go, Secretary General, we had a couple of young Africans come up to the camera a little bit earlier on. And they were talking about Kabila and, you know, and him being Rwandese. And one of them was saying, you know, we want to eat Kabila because, you know, I want to know where he got his, where he signed to say he's from Congo because he's not from Congo. Yeah. And we just wanted you to give a bit of a summation in terms of that as well.
The problem is imperialism. And imperialism can come in many forms. What we need people to realize that people criticize Kabila saying he's from Rwanda, but they don't criticize imperialism. So they will use the criticism of Rwanda to deflect the criticism of Mobutus and other forces who are there, because they believe they should be part of the neo-colonial leadership. So we say Rwanda must be free, Congo must be free, Africa must be free, the masses of Africa and Congo and Rwanda, all over the place. You have to come together and sweep, wipe out the whole sellout Petit Bourgeois forces so we can unite.
Okay, we're going to end now. As we can see, the march is kicking off, and we can see right in the front the Uhuru Movement banner, the real cost of iPods, phones, PlayStations, and so forth is thousands, millions of dead, thousands raped every day in the Congo. That's the real price for iPods and mobile phones and so forth. Uhuru.
You were just listening to an interview done with Luwesi Kinshasa, the Secretary General of the African Socialist International, at a demonstration that was happening in Paris, France, in opposition to the theft of elections and opposition to the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We're going to continue with this program and continue looking at the Democratic Republic of Congo here on Africa Live on WhoRadio.com.
Chase those crazy ballers out of a town. telling us of your God above. We gonna chase those crazy, chase those crazy bumpets, chase those crazy bullets out of the yard.
Woman!
Welcome back to Africa Live here on WhoRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyambinga Zimbabwe, and what we want to do now is continue to look at the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo, going to an interview done with Makola, who is an ASI organizer at a demonstration in London, England, in opposition to the situation in Congo. This is an interview done by Hoora News with ASI organizer Makola.
Uhuru, comrade Makola, we're here again tonight in front of Downing Street. There's a big crowd of Africans from the Congo, and the election day has gone. They've proclaimed Kabila as the winner of the election, and the people say it wasn't their choice. What do you think we should do, and where do you think we should go from here?
First of all, I just want to say that what you're seeing here is victory. It's victory to the African people, because they cannot stop us from being on the street. They cannot stop us in Egypt. They cannot stop us in Ivory Coast. They cannot stop us in the Congo. This is victory to us. We knew that imperialists are a country. We knew that France, America, Britain will put Kabila as their choice. We knew that. We knew that. But what we're saying is now, it's our time to organize, because this is the power of the African people. We have told David Cameron that we are going to be on the street every single day to let them know the time is up for them. They cannot rule Africa as they used to. They cannot determine what happens in Africa anymore. As I speak right now, we are organizing here outside Downing Street. Africans in Belgium are organizing. Africans in France are organizing. Africans in Africa, in the Congo, are organizing against the colonial and neo-colonial army of Kabila and the British and American government, who are supporting him. So we're saying,
Congolese, show your support.
We're saying this isn't about being Congolese, because the people who are killing us are not just British. They're American, they're French, they're from Rwanda, they're from Uganda, they're from Angola, and Congolese too. So we cannot fight just as Congolese. We cannot fight just, this is why we lost. In the 60s, we lost because we fought as Congolese. Today, we will win because we have to fight as Africans. We have 2 billion people, Africans, all around the world. And we are saying it's about time we organize. We organize in the Congo. We organize in Angola. We organize in Uganda, Burundi. We organize in Nigeria, in Ivory Coast. We organize in London. We organize in France, because we...
You're listening to Africa Live here on WhoRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we... are continuing today to look at the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the mobilizations that have been happening in various places around the world in response to that situation. We want to go to an interview that I did on just yesterday with Luigi Kinshasa, Secretary General of the African Socialist International. This was an interview done with him live, actually. He was live at the site of a mobilization that was happening, a demonstration in London, England. So we'll go to that interview right now. So we're starting now.
Yep.
So who are you listening to? Whoradio.com. This is Nubinga Zimbabwe, and we're joined live remotely by Luwesi Kinshasa, Secretary General of the African Socialist International, who is right now at a demonstration in London, England. One of many demonstrations that has been going on since not long before the elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Uhuru Luwesi.
Yes, welcome, Vinga.
Can you say what is happening out there?
First of all, I just want to say thank you to Uhuru Radio for giving us the opportunity to speak to the world about what's happening. I'm in London here, and this is a demonstration organized by different groups from the Congo in protest of the elections. Everyone believes was won by Tshisekedi, and Kabila has been sworn in instead of Tshisekedi. And this is the primary motivation of the people who are coming here. So we have something like 1,000 people here demonstrating, and this is just one of the many demonstrations the Africans from the Congo are holding today.
Hmm. And what the demonstration there today is doing? I understand it's got a specific destination.
The people, they're asking for this again to be president, and they want the powers of Europe to facilitate that. That's the understanding that the masses have. That the more they demonstrate, the more likely the white power leaders will listen to them. But we come to demonstrate for different reasons. We come in here so we can influence the demonstrators and win them to a new vision, to our analysis of African internationalism, so they can see that it's bigger than the Tshisekedi, bigger than Kabila. The question of freedom and liberation of Congo and the liberation of all Africa is more than the election. It was taken more than the election. So that's why we're here. But most of the people are here because they believe the election has been stolen. So they come here to reclaim justice.
Uhuru. So what is the general mood out there? Go ahead.
People are excited. I'm here. I moved away from the march. There are about 200 to 300 people who are already here outside Downing Street. Children, mothers, fathers, grandparents. They're all here, you know, wrapped in the Congo flags. And you go out, people are already here. So people are excited. People, they believe they can make history. In fact, they believe they're making history. They just discovered the people's power, something that was hidden from the people for 50 years. Since the overthrow of Lumumba's government, the masses have not been mobilized in this way by their own self-interest, because they believe it's in their interest, basically, to demonstrate, you know, and there is no central organization basically organizing all this. So it's really a motion of the people.
Hmm. So does it seem that the mobilizations that are happening are intensifying?
Say it again?
I said, does it seem like the mobilizations that are happening, are they intensifying?
Yeah. I would say so. There has been definitely a stabilization of demonstration, because it's almost every day in London, this demonstration, over 100 or a couple of hundred. And then in the weekend, or one day in the week, it's a big demonstration. And I attended one 2 weeks ago that was attended by 5,000 people, and today is another big demonstration. So you have here, I can see over 2,000 people from what I can see here. So, and another one's happening in Canada, in Ottawa. Another one's happening in Denver, Colorado, and among the other ones happening I'm not aware of. But this is now the talk in every home of the African from the Congo in Europe. You know, demonstration in the churches, demonstration. There are people saying if your church, your preachers, your pastors are not in the demonstration, they are collaborators, you know. So that's the general, you know, discussion taking place. So people are really excited. You can see people talking, shaking hands, the youngsters, teenagers, they're all here, you know, doing all kind of moves, like you see, you know, chanting by themselves. They just are a new atmosphere. Most of the people, most of the generation who have grown from the 80s, 90s have not witnessed, except those who were young in the 60s. They can recall, they can attend for themselves with this. For the new generation, it's a new thing.
So is it... Excuse me. So the people who are participating in the demonstration, are we seeing various age groups?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I see people I haven't seen for a long time. You know, people in the 60s are here, in the 50s are here, in the 40s are here. Now in front of me, you can hear the people applauding. The youngster, probably 13 or 14 years old, he has a coffin, and his friend has a cross. So in that coffin, they put in Gabriela. So people are applauding. So you have it's a lot of youngsters here, real youngsters, you know. And in fact, I think the young people are majority. Huh. Yeah, I think it would be fair to say that. Young people are majority.
Now, can you say, Luezi, what is, well, first of all, before we go there, so this demonstration that you're in right now, it's going to the Prime Minister's office? Is that what's happening?
Say it again.
Is the demonstration you're in right now, is that when, where is it located at?
Yeah, we marched from Temple, which is central London, and we walked for about an hour and a half from there to Downing Street. Downing Street is like where the White House is. So that's the office of the Prime Minister of Britain. So that's where we are now. So we are in opposite. It's our office. It's a main avenue. So we all line up, all of us there. So that's where the march ends. So it's always symbolical. People want to speak. They want the Prime Minister or the ruler of the land to hear their grievances. That's where they come. Huh. So that's where we are right now.
And can you say what has been the response from the state there in England up to now to the demonstrations?
Well, we know the press has been ignoring it. Over today, I saw a lot of people, a lot of white people, cameras and camcorders. I'm not sure who they are, if they're the press or not. But the state basically recognized the power of the number. We are always surrounded by a lot of police, really a lot. I can see easily 50 vans of the police here. So a lot of police presence. You got helicopters above. So they recognize our statues, you know, colonized people protesting. So they mobilize the state to deal with us. But at the same time, the government of this country does not make any public statement regarding what's happening in the Congo. I'm not aware of anything like that. So it's just don't keep it quiet. Don't say anything. They speak about what's happening in Russia, what's happening in Egypt, what's happening in other places, but they don't touch the Congo. And this is the same in France. This is the same in Belgium. This is the same everywhere. Of course, you go like in Belgium, I'm told some place speaking about it, but it's not like the main news. It's always like a side news. Hmm. You know, when you think the size of the crowd, when you think of the consistency of the march, this has been going on for almost I would say 3 weeks, you know, but it's not covered. The main news, you buy a newspaper tomorrow in England, they will not talk about it.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, which is quite good for us, because it allows the people to define our whole history, to put our news ourselves, you know, and it also teach the people that you can't all rely on imperialist media. That's also something new that people are learning.
Now, can you say what is the situation now in the Congo? These demonstrations have been aimed at impacting on the election
yes.
situation. Can you say what
yes,
how that's developed?
Impact. We're getting calls, reports that saying they feel motivated. They know now what's happening in the Congo is not being that isolation. And they say it gives them the courage to go forward. You know, like yesterday, the security was supposed to be shown in by his own team, but it was banned. But there was a lot of protest throughout Kinshasa and other places. And I know in other cities in the Congo, it's the same situation. You go protest on a regular basis. So the people are aware that the marches, the protests happening in the Congo is being done elsewhere. So this sense of oneness, I think... has been a positive change, a positive input, basically, in people's mind. We begin to see many fronts by the same struggle, which in the final analysis, in the end, is good for those of us who understand the necessity to unite all African struggles into one revolutionary struggle. those of us, we understand that we need to unite all these fronts of African resistance and revolution into one front, into one struggle unified by the African Socialist International. Those who understand that, this makes it easier. When you say to them, one struggle, many fronts, people just fear that they understand that. So it's really good. It really opens up many possibilities. You can discuss strategies. You know, what is our international strategy? So this really makes it easy to understand the necessity to have a strategy and, you know, elaborate your tactics based on that. So I think it's really good.
And how can you say what's going on between Kabila's regime and Tshisekedi at this point? Does there seem to be any development in terms of? I know the results. Both of them have come out saying that declaring themselves president. But has there been any development in that sense?
At the moment, we don't know yet how things are moving between the two. In terms of who has to have a hand. But we know basically what we're going to say that the African petty bourgeoisie in Africa has not sided with Kabila because the sworn-in ceremony was almost boycotted. Only Mugabe showed up. You know, all the head of state didn't show up, apart from Mugabe. They sent junior ministers, people like that, and which is an indication of the state basically, it's an indication of the consciousness, you know, in the head of those African presidents. They're being cautious. You know, they are not definitely certain that Kabila is going to stay in power. You know, and we know international observer, you know, those who work for imperialists, they have also published statements basically putting in doubt what they have seen. So things are not definite here. So we don't know how imperialists are going to move. But things are not definite yet. So Tshisekedi and the supporters there believe the victory is there. You know, and they're not going to compromise on that. So far, that's what we have seen. We have not heard of any calls for, like, government of national unity, like we saw in Zimbabwe and other places. No, we haven't heard anything like that yet.
Okay. So, You were speaking earlier. First of all, you're participating in these demonstrations representing the ASI, the African Socialist International. Can you say what the African Socialist International sees as the solution to what we're seeing right now in the Congo?
Yeah, right now what we're trying to intervene so that we can elevate the domains, we can elevate the organization to a higher level, because a lot of young people are coming forward. We're talking to them. We have a meeting that's happening on the 4th of January, the Maasai Day in the Congo. So we try to maximize that meeting to make it a success in the way that we're going to launch on our organization, you know, the Partition Movement Coalition, that will be able to show a new direction, because the people who are coming here, they are workers. The vast majority are workers, and they are tired of being exploited. They're tired of knowing that they're from the richest place in the world, and they're living in the misery. The parents left home, back home, are also living in the misery. So we're trying definitely capture that. And one way is that we're trying to bring Mumba's ideals and the struggles back into the consciousness of the people. And last day, we chanted our slogans, and one of our slogans, because was like end the genocide in the Congo now, end the looting, all looters, all genocide forces out of Congo. And these slogans have been adapted by the march. All the march will be singing that song. They didn't take all our slogans, but that was one. So that's kind of what we want to do, introduce new slogans, because most of the slogans that people have is around Kabila, if not around Rwanda. But we want our slogans that speak to the conditions of the people. So the question of genocide is one of them. And the question of, you know, of getting back our resources, getting back control of our country, basically, in our slogans, you know, we're trying to protect all that. And And it's good to hear the people basically repeating that. Otherwise, most of the slogans basically don't really talk about imperialism, don't really talk about occupation, don't really talk about the wars being done on the people. You know, so they don't see imperialists as such. They see Kabila. So we're trying to move the police, you know, further than that. Not just see Kabila, but see imperialism. And being also to see the limitation or the opportunism of that kind of people just itself in the Congo. So it's been a good struggle today. Really good struggle in the march. You can see how there is definitely a struggle of slogans, you know, during the march. But it's something we need to do better. You know, have clear banners, clear placards, all these kind of things. So, and have agitators. Yeah, in a heavy sector, if you go to many sectors in the march, they might be seen differently. So, and we want to make sure we are everywhere. So, yeah. It's really good struggle. Really good struggle.
Sure.
Good. So, how do you see these demonstrations develop? How do you see this thing going? Go ahead.
But there are two things. Our success in building our organization that will be able to organize the people and protect the interests of the revolution, give a new direction that that radicalize the masses, is one thing. And also, how the imperialists are going to respond, how quickly will they be able to remove the forces of this demonstration, is also one thing. So it depends on these two factors, you know, so far I can understand what's going on. So you can see here now people are singing, chanting. But the slogan doesn't speak about their own condition, you know. The slogan speaks about Kabila being from Rwanda, you know. And that's basically one of the struggles we are involved in, introducing new demands, new chants, you know, because the people are definitely repeating what they know, you know, and that's what you can hear now. That's work.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. The mobilization sounds amazing out there.
Basically, you know, the meeting we're gonna have on the 4th of January is really an important meeting, because there we're gonna have the structures, we're gonna have the program, and we're also going to be able to have new forces basically, and that we will win to the program, to the vision that we have. That will change a lot of things, because it means that when we come back here next time, we'll be here in the numbers and better organized. Because at the moment, as I said, one of the problems we have here, there is no leadership as such. You go different groups, and people go in all directions, So I don't know how long this will go on. But at the moment, what basically is keeping us going is the deadlock is not resolved in the Congo. And people definitely are convinced that Kabila must go. There is no doubt about it. That's a conviction that Kabila must go. So as long as Kabila is there, I think the motivation will still be there. But we need to introduce a consciousness that protects the interests of the people in a way that the people can begin to see that we need to have an organization and a program that speaks to the interests and aspirations of people. And that would mean that struggling against all kinds of solutions of imperialism in any form, in the Congo form or Rwanda form, what form imperialism takes in the Congo, the people should be able to identify that and fight against it and protect our own interests, our own program, so you can basically educate people and, ride on this energy that people are bringing from all directions, you know, so we can target imperialism better. So we have to succeed in a couple of weeks. We need to be able to start this energy. There's a lot of people here, a lot of young people here, you know. So, yeah. And you can see the agitation, only us can come here and do a real political agitation. I can see our forces, you know, different groups trying to speak at the ground. So, yeah.
Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer. I know you you're out there doing the work. So, is there anything that you want to say in closing before we finish this interview?
We just want people to participate to these struggles and people who are from Congo are listening. We want them to understand that this struggle is a struggle for all Africans. And wherever you are, you can unite with these struggles. And one way of doing it, you can begin to organize discussion meetings around the Congo, around the Bumbas, and ask people to be in touch with us so that people begin to see this is a continuity from the struggle needs to see, and the struggle is happening now, and the direction the struggle needs to take, if it's going to go in the right direction, is to resurrect the ideas and practice Lumumba. And I think anybody who has been around in this world, whatever you have, may have not practiced Lumumba. So we can begin to organize, bring people to discover Lumumba, and that's the first step of building support for the liberation struggle that has begun to unfold in the Congo and everywhere else where the Africans from Congo are located.
Well, thank you so much for taking time in the demonstration to rap with us, we'll be continuing to cover this situation around the Democratic Republic of Congo and the mobilizations that are happening everywhere around the world right now.
So. I say thank you to Uhuru Radio for giving us the opportunity to share with the world what's happening here. Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Argue, argument about stealing. Somebody don't take something we belong to another person. On top of the road, on the side, the people, the worker. Office workers, the labor workers, workers, workers. Them go they worker. Inside bus, them go they. Motorcycle, them they ride. Plenty crowd inside this crowd. Sometimes for one corner, sometimes for one street. You go there here.
Catch up, catch up, tiff, tiff, tiff. Catch up, catch up, roll, roll, roll. Catch up, catch up, rubber, rubber. Catch up, catch up,
hold on. Start watching, go start chasing, go start. Somebody go there, where them go grab them, go beat them well, well, them fit lynch them well, well. Police go come well, well, them go carry them, go cut them, go put them for jail. Them fit put them 6 months,
go them go put them 1 year,
them fit put them 2 years.
Never put up for 5 years.
Them fit put them 7 years.
Never put up for 10 years.
Them fit put them 6 months.
Never put up for 1 year.
Them fit put them 2 years.
Never put up for 5 years.
Them fit put them 7 years.
Never put up for 10 years.
If not, them go shoot them well. Them go shoot them for arm robbery. Workers, labor workers, workers, workers. Them go they try to try to make ends meet. Them go they hustle to try to make ends meet. Them go put hands for back to try to make ends meet. Them go they beg your God to try to make ends meet. Them go be slaves for them town to try to make ends meet. Yes, them go they try to try to make ends meet. Them go they hustle to try to make ends meet. I say turn your face small to the right wing. Oga bata bata day for the authority people day for the instead of workers. We have officials instead of buses. Them they ride motor car instead of motorcycle. Now helicopter instead of them worker. Now worker go worker for them. Authority people them go they steal. Public contribute plenty money. Now authority people they steal. Authority man not the big bucket. Now petty cash him go they pick. I'm robber, him need gun. Authority man, him need pen. Authority man in charge of money. Him no need gun, him need pen. Pen get power, gonna get. If gun steal 80,000 naira, pen go steal 2 billion naira. You not go hear them shout. You not go hear them shout at all.
You
not go hear them say.
Robber, robber.
You not go say those words at all. You not go hear them shout. Shout to
tell,
you see those words to tell. You hear them say,
blah, blah, blah.
You hear them shout.
Blah, blah, blah.
You see those words.
You
hear them shout.
Blah, blah, blah.
You hear them tell the word.
Blah, blah, blah.
Now different way be them way. Now see the lifestyle be them style.
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh yes, of course. Contract or something many back on our head.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, the ones them they take deceive the people.
Yes, 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 yes.
Misappropriation.
Yes, 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 yes.
Maladministration.
Yes, 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 yes.
Nepotism.
Yes, 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 yes.
mitigation.
Yes, 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 yes.
Make a remember not the one who wave them they use.
Yes, 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 yes.
The fraudulent.
Yes, 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 yes.
For generalization.
Yes, 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 yes.
Embezzlement.
Yes, 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 yes.
Vilification.
Yes.
Mismanagement.
Yes, 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 yes.
Public inquiry.
Yes, 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 yes.
Authority stealing, pass and robbery.
Yes, 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 yes.
We Africans, we must do something about this nonsense.
Yes, 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 yes.
We say we must do something about this nonsense.
Yes, yes,
I repeat,
yes, yes,
we Africans, we must do something about this nonsense.
Yes,
man, don't go distill. Public country, don't lend you money. Now your authority, people go still. Authority, man, buy the big pocket. No dirty cash, him go the peak. I'm brother, him me gun. Authority, man, him need pen. Authority, man, he charge of money. Him no need gun, him need pen. Pen get power, gun on it. If gun steal 80,000 naira, pen go steal 2 million naira. And now we hear them shout, tippy-tippy.
Yes, 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 yes.
Ah, and now we hear them shout, it all rub-rub-rub.
Yes, yes,
oh, no, 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 no. And now we hear them shout, it all tippy-tippy.
Yes, yes,
ah, authority stealing for some robbery.
Yes, yes,
yes, we must do something about this nonsense.
Yes, 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 yes.
How is it possible that people just die every day in a land so rich? What about them?
Swear.
What about them?
Swear. Be a soul.
Where you at?
My people's rise and take it to the streets.
Where you at?
Organizing, man, this crisis is deep.
Where you at?
But we ain't seen you in a couple of weeks. Don't let them have y'all scared to speak. Raise up the fight and be free.
Where you at?
In the streets, to the gutters, the alleys.
Now where you at?
The bus stops, barbershops, and the traps.
And where you at?
At the rally, listening to Chairman O'Malley. From Guinea, Corner, Green, to Cali. Scream Black Power's how you find.
I used to be young and foolish, didn't know what to do with my life. But inside was a clue, the situation was ruined. If life is a game, then Africans, we had to be losing. That's when I went to school and came in contact with the movement. That's when I finally found out that I was an African. Wasn't no magic boats back when the crackers started to trap again. From back then up until right now, it was always fighting. Don't even think that we're settling down. No civil rights, man, get it right, man. Every Africa is our lifeline. So now we're organizing, win this thing in our lifetime. It's fight time, ding. And around the world, people's just bucking. And if you think that you won't pray it away, then good luck, cause you won't need it. In fact, you weed it a bit too much. These crackers giving out nothing but beatings. And dude, that sucks. But why you duck and tell you what you need to look at the facts? Ain't a people that got us some freedom without fighting back. So where you at?
My people ride and take them to the streets.
And where you at?
Organizing, man, this crisis is deep.
Where you at?
But we ain't seen you in a couple of weeks. Don't let them have y'all scared to speak. Raise up and fight for the free.
Where you at?
In the streets, to the gutters, the alley.
And where you at?
The bus stops, barbershops, and the traps.
And where you at?
At the rally, listening to Chairman O'Malley. From Candy Corner, to Clear the Cali Street. Like I was how you find.
Find me in South Beach, D.C., 5 minutes away from where George Bush and them stayed, where they equip young Africans with AKs and CRACK to commit violence horizontally, but ironically, we bust back with philosophy. Now we looking for enemies, finding new use for Hennessy, Molotov ring a bell to me, going to my seats, we getting free, getting cheese, not a concern to me, crack is hurting me, trigonometry, matter of fact, they scared of me, cause I'm down with the people, bust rounds for the people, if you down with the beast, look down for your people. Black. Who is it? A true movement with a new vision. No who isn't bullshit. If we fool clippers, smoke niggas, pull triggers for you snitches. Triggers for you, my comrades from here to Sierra Leone. I say these raps, these tracks, spray these gats. That's where we at. That's where we at. That's where we at. That's where we at.
You're listening to Africa Live here on UhuruRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabing in Zimbabwe, and we're going to take the rest of the program today just to take another listen to a presentation made by Chairman O'Malley Eshetela on the origin of the Santa Claus myth. So stay tuned here on WhoRadio.com. This is a presentation by Chairman O'Malley Eshetela done in 2004. On the origin of the Santa Claus Christmas story.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is on the deer. It's up.
Today on Omalia Yeshitela Speaks, we will hear a presentation by African Socialist International Chairman Omalia Yeshitela to the regular Sunday community meeting of the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida on December 19th of 2004. Chairman Omalia talks about the colonial origins of the Santa Claus myth that is associated with the celebration of Christmas. He talks about his recent visit to Amsterdam, where he witnessed their annual parade featuring white Dutch people in blackface and the pervasive store window decorations featuring the colonial story. In this speech entitled, The Truth About Santa Claus, Colonial Origins of Holiday Traditions.
I want to call up Chairman Omalia.
These days I want to find out what the deputy did that make him and his life so sacred. I want to thank everybody for coming out on today's. Sister Gaida, National Secretary, International Secretary of the Party, has mentioned it's people, it's difficult to get folk out during this holiday season. What I'd like to do, first of all, is to also recognize some folk. I think other members of the Uhuru basketball team just came in. Is that right? Can the Uhuru basketball team just stand up? Because we love y'all so much. Y'all so fantastic. Yeah. Can the families and other people who support the team stand up as well? We just think so highly of you. You're such a fantastic group, all of you. Thank you so much for what you do. And you little brothers, I see there are no sisters here from the basketball team today? Okay. Because our team, the brothers and sisters play on this team. We like that a lot, to have the brothers and sisters play, because the sisters, you know, achieve a lot of confidence and doing that, and the young brothers learn a lot about being able to relate to women, to sisters. So that's really important. I'd also like to acknowledge Sister Gaida did not mention when she was talking about some of the people from the Central Committee who are here. She did not indicate that she, of course, is a member of the Central Committee herself. This is Sister Gaida, who's been presiding, chairing this meeting, and I see Sister Iranif also walked in, and I think it's important to note that. But these are not only that for the fact that women have are leaders in our organization, but have historically played a profoundly important leading role. And I think these two sisters have been in the work for more than 20 years, and there are. This is the first time right now that our Central Committee has had more men on it than women. And I say that because it's something that I'm proud of, and I think our community should be proud of our people, and I think also that African women in general should be proud of. I want to recognize Comrade Penny Hess, who is the chairwoman of the African People Solidarity Committee. Sister Penny has been a part of the Uhuru movement since about 1976. Is that right? 76. Comrade Penny Hess, why don't you stand up, Penny? That's 28 years commitment, which means that she's been in the movement longer than some of the people in our part in our movement have been alive. And I'm really appreciative of the fact that she's been here. I want to indicate Now we're gonna show some stuff on the projection stuff on the wall shortly, and we're gonna have to pay for that projector, so we're gonna have to raise some money before we get out of here. I think that thing cost us about $90-some-odd just to use it for today. We're gonna have to buy one, but we won't show that right now. I want to begin by saying, I'd like to also introduce Sister Mary Higgs. Stand up, Sister Mary. Those of you who heard the radio show on Saturday morning heard Sister Mary. She was on the show. Sister Mary was on the show because her man, his name is Richard Lloyd, and he was arrested in 1975 for snatching a cash box and was given from 6 months to life in prison. He spent 9 years in prison before being paroled. And after being paroled, he was arrested again for possession of $25 of cocaine, worth of cocaine. And he's been locked up for 18 years now for that parole violation. And I mention this because our community is so criminalizing. People often find themselves in the community engaging in conduct and that they don't understand themselves. There's a popular saying that people are familiar with from an old television show that I really suspect has its origin in the African community and in the prisons. That's because I used to hear it said in the prison all the time. If you do the crime, you got to do the time. And there's a kind of fatalism in our community around that issue. And a lot of Africans are in prison. In fact, 12% of all the African men in America are locked up in prison. That's 12 out of every 100 African men in this country are in a prison. And among the other things that prisons do to our community is that they constitute a form of forced birth control. And I say this in a very literal sense. It's not to make comedy at all. I've been reading recently that in most of the so-called industrialized countries, which means the white world, that there is an actual decline in birth rates. And a real fear that's often reflected in writings of some of the leading thinkers of the white ruling class of the United States and Europe. There's a real fear of the implications of a declining population and an aging population. So that even not only do you have fewer people being born in most of the white world, but there's an aging population. And in this country, what has been pointed out as really extraordinary and unusual is that there's an actual flattening of the birth rate of the African people, and that we can anticipate a decline in the population of African people and the production rate. They say that it is necessary for at least a birth rate of increase of at least 2.5%. Percent in order to maintain the birth rate and population rate. And that is now African population in this country is in a process of declining. And one of the fundamental reasons for that is the imprisonment, the incarceration of African people. Well, someone said, if you do the crime, then you have to do the time. But what happens is that the crime itself, the definition of the crime, has to do with the relationship that people have to the society and to the social system itself. For example, we live in a country where if you steal a car, you can get a whole bunch of time in prison for stealing a car. But in the same country, I remember when I think it was the Pinto automobile that it had the faulty gas tank that if someone bumped it from the rear, it would catch a fire. So this car would catch a fire, could kill anybody in the car, and there was no criminal penalty associated with that. And the fact is, there's no criminal penalty associated with the fact that corporations make cars for the purpose of deconstructing, for actually falling apart after a certain period of time so that you'll come back and buy another car. There's no crime, because the one who makes the law defines the ones who benefit from this existing social system that we're talking about. So the one who makes the law defines that the criminal is the one who steals the car, and the one who makes the law is also the one who makes the car. So he makes the car and makes it unnecessary for him to pay any penalties for making a car that you will die in, that they know you will die in, right? And or even you see these medical corporations now, you see them telling the, they're taking certain drugs off the system, off the market, because they didn't kill so many people that nobody's going to buy it anymore, and they might get sued, but there's no criminal charges to that, even though they know that, and they will show you evidence that they knew that it would kill people. The ones who make cigarettes, they've hid for years and years and years that they know that the cigarettes would kill you, but there's no crime criminal involved in that. The thing is that that you have a certain kind of social system in place, so that one born of slavery, so that it is during this process, for example, people like to talk about it. Liberals love this discussion about the felony inability of felons to vote, and of course in many states in the South. And of course, this impacts on Africans in a very serious way. There are thousands, perhaps millions of African men who cannot vote because they are convicted felons. But the reality is, this, even as they have this discussion, what they know is that the reason that is true is because the government, the states throughout the South, at the end of slavery, to make sure that the slave, the former slave, did not come to power politically, created a situation so that if you became a felon, you could never be able to vote, and they would never be able to vote it out of power. Then they created laws specifically designed for African people who had no control at all in the political economy to make sure that you were the ones who broke the law, became a felon, and that you were the one who would never be able to vote. They had such a thing as a hog law, a pig law, where you automatically got 10 years in prison if you stole a pig. Well, after slavery, who was the ones during slavery who grew all the food, who raised all the animals, including the hogs and everything? Africans. And Africans refused to work for white people anymore after slavery. And so when people wanted to eat, they simply went to the plantations where they had raised the food and raised the animals and took what they wanted to eat. And so they made it a crime to do that, right? If you wouldn't work for white folk, they're going to make sure you work for white folk. Then you steal a pig, you got 10 years, and guess what you did when you went to jail? They leased you out to the former person, to the former slave master, so you went right back to work for the person, and you were treated worse than you were treated before. Because now, you are not his property, formerly. And he doesn't have a stake in taking care of you. He doesn't care if you live or die, because he doesn't lose anything. Now you're the property of the white folk state. And they had a saying. They would work Africans so bad, they say, if one dies, get another. One dies, get another. And so here you have all these Africans in prison, having the slightest idea why the hell they are there. Don't know that they live in communities where there are economic quarantines. Just like Cuba, just like how the white folks, the white establishment, how white power, the government will not allow any resources to go into Cuba. They do the same thing to your communities all around the country and around the world. If you don't believe it, why do you think that the same thing happens in St. Petersburg as happened in Philadelphia or New York or Houston, Texas, in terms of our ability to eat and live? It's a quarantine. And the other thing that they did even during slavery that they do now, they have a welfare process now. I forgot how much this. So welfare, I think, gives you what's supposed to be food stamps, welfare, something like 65% of what you require to exist. Well, how are you supposed to get the other? And so what they do, even during slavery, they will put you in situations where the only way that you could survive is to steal what you needed to exist. They would create a culture of crime in the community. So here you have all these Africans living out here. White folks got everything, never worked a day in their life. I used to look at this damn, and I'm not trying to be funny, and I know some people did work. But I'm not talking about those individuals, that those 16 people who had jobs. What I'm talking about... What I'm talking about is that there is a social reality that we are confronted with. I'm talking about social reality. I'm talking about a political economy that has its origin in stealing somebody's land in terms of indigenous population and the free forced labor of African people. That's the thing that built this economy. I used to watch this commercial. I got mine the hard way. I worked for it. Oh, please. If working for it got you anything, Africans would have every damn thing, and white people would be somebody getting welfare and food stamp man. So you have this terrible situations where they will create a culture of crime in your community, and you got these old dumb Negro chicken eating, butt kissing, boot licking preachers. I can't stand them. They should get honest jobs, like at least comparably honest, like selling dope or something like that. Because they sell you, they sell us. And they are the ones who are right always in the face of the white establishment condemning our community that's simply trying to live.
Yes.
As opposed to intervening in the struggle to make it possible for people to live, they are condemning people who's attempting to live. I was just going to introduce Sister Mary Higgs, and I got off on this. And this brother has been down for 18 years for a parole violation. They said, well, I thought it's the law. Well, I can't buck that. But doesn't mean anything to me because slavery was legal too. And so you haven't told me anything when you say it's the law. So what? What? So what? It's the law. I just read a poll that says that 44% of the people who live in this country think some restrictions should be put on Muslims in this country.
Yeah.
Hell, the Muslims, quote unquote, just got here. What you think they would say if they asked the right questions about you? They've already voted in the past on your ass.
Yeah. See?
They sustained it. They vote every time they vote right now. There's a public policy right now existing in this country that criminalizes African people. Public policy of police containment of African people.
Yes.
Supported by every institution in this country. Every politician who runs for office runs against you.
Yes.
Runs against crime. Runs against wasteful spending by the government. Social programs and what have you. They don't call you a nigger anymore. They leave that to you. They just call you criminals. They call you special interests and things like that when you're fighting for your life. Anyway, this brother's in prison. And as I told Sister Mary, the contradiction, of course, right now is that we don't have a social movement to pull him out of there. And that's what we have to build. And I'm hoping that her presence here today speaks to her recognition of that reality and coming together with other African people who are in the process of building a social movement. Because the reality is this. They get you. They get you one at a time. One by one. And their ability to get you is less likely, is decreased. By the extent to which you have achieved organization. Because when they come at us, they know they got to fight. When they come at Uhuru, they got a fight in their hands, and they know it. And so they do think twice. But I want to move forward. Because we have a lot of struggle that we're involved in. And we have to struggle to understand what this movement is about, what the struggle is about that we're involved in. I want to share this with you, though. Since July, I've been doing an incredible amount of traveling around the world. I've been to London twice. I've been to Belgium and Paris twice. I spent 2 weeks in what they call South Africa, traveling all over various provinces or organizing, helping to organize African resistance, revolution there. I was in Suriname in South America for a week participating in the creation of an international organization of African people. This is basically a middle class kind of democratic organization that I worked with in that instance. I made the keynote presentation at that event in Paris, made the keynote presentation of the meeting of the leadership of the European section of that event. I will be going, I've been asked to come to Berlin next year, February of next year, just a few months from now, because it will be the 100, I think, and 20th anniversary of the Berlin Conference. The Berlin Conference, of course, is an occasion where the Pope, in 1894 and going into 95, there was a conference by the Pope conducted this conference in Berlin, Germany. And it was a conference that was called because European countries were at each other's throats fighting over, about to go to war over Africa's resources, stealing our resources. They've already stole some of Africa's most valuable resources. That includes us, right? And now they want, they're fighting over the resources left in our mother country. So the Pope called a conference, and at this conference, they split up Africa. If you look at a map of Africa today, all of these so-called borders and countries, et cetera, that exist in Africa today are there as a consequence of the Pope. The Pope carved it up and then gave each of the European countries a piece of Africa, a piece of your homeland, the birthright of your children was given to all of these white countries. And so they're having a commemorative event in Berlin, I think it's their 120th anniversary. My math ain't that good. And they've asked me to be the keynote speaker for that. So I'm going there. I was in Holland in, what month was that? I was in Holland. November, I think it was. Yes, I was in Holland in November. I was in Holland. I'm sorry. Huh? I was in, Holland is in Europe. And I was in first in Eindhoven, Holland. And I attended a meeting of peoples from all over the world, mostly from the Philippines, but from Turkey, from Iran, Iraq, from Palestine. You read about Palestine almost every day. They call it Israel now. They stole the land from the original inhabitants, the Palestinians, and then scratched the name off and then called it Israel and then call themselves Israelis and act like they've always been there. And so, so there's an ongoing, terrible, brutal struggle that the Palestinian people are involved in what they call Israel. And so there were people from Palestine who were there, people from India who were there, people from Pakistan who were there, from Brazil, from the United States, and we were, our delegation, one African from Congo, one from Virgin Island, myself, and Gia. We were there. We were the four of the only six Africans who were there. But the point that I'm making is that all over the world, people are struggling to change their relationship to white power imperialism. Everywhere. And people are organizing and doing what they can to make this change. And African people around the world are organizing to build an all-African movement, coming back together again, recognizing that we are one people involved in struggle against a common enemy. This is a reality. And I'm telling you this because there's a whole change that's occurring in the world. And you are a part of it. And right now, because that change, as it relates to African people, has not penetrated the news, and therefore has not penetrated the consciousness of European or white power. Because the problem is that they decide what it is that they're going to print and put on television and put on the news media, and they forget that they're the ones who make that decision. So if it's not in the newspaper or not on the television or not on the radio, it's not happening. They convince themselves it's not happening. They've made the decision not to put it on the radio. So it takes something like a 9/11. See, Labadam, there is such a thing as an Arab and a Muslim whose oil we are stealing. Right? It takes that kind of thing to awaken them. So there's a movement, brothers and sisters. This is the point that I'm making. That slavery and oppression and colonialism And neocolonialism and occupation is not something that is everlasting. That people around the world are doing everything they can to overturn this relationship, and we are part of that movement. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about Santa Claus. How many people know Santa Claus in here? Well, Santa Claus, there's a history to Santa Claus. And we want to say some things about that history. But I told you I was in Holland. And one of the places I was in Holland was in Amsterdam. I was in Amsterdam, I think, on November 4th. And in Holland, they have this thing about Santa Claus. The name of the Santa Claus that you, this little cherubic, chubby, little unhealthy white guy, that you, well, now he's even become brown and black and stuff like that, that you take your children to visit. This Santa Claus has its origin, its immediate origin, in Santa Claus. Santa Claus is the Dutch name, and it was the patron saint of shipping. There's a Catholic in the room, know what I'm talking about when I say a patron saint of shipping, Santa Claus. And according to the Dutch, Santa Claus is this wonderful guy who comes along, and with traveling with Santa Claus is an African whose name is Swarte Piet, Black Piet. And Santa Claus travels throughout the Netherlands, throughout Holland, and Piet is the helper. He works for Santa Claus. And he gives away gifts to the good children, and to the bad children, he puts them in a sack and takes them to Spain. So when I was in Holland, the Santa Claus parade was happening. And I didn't know it was happening. When we first got there, we were walking through a mall, and I saw a little white child in an outfit that with a little cape on, and with something like soot on her face. And I thought, okay, this is November. Maybe in November they do something like Halloween in Holland. Because I wasn't thinking about the Santa Claus and the Black Pete thing until we began walking from the train station to the place that we were going to be staying. And the person who was walking with us, who himself is a politician, he says, the Santa Claus parade is going to be happening right here. You want to see it? And say, yeah, let's see the parade. And so here we are standing watching this parade, this incredible thing that was mind-boggling. They had a thing, a parade, and all, first of all, I saw all these white people with soot, like not soot, like shoe polish, black face, like minstrels, right? And all over their faces. And so I couldn't believe it. I'm taking pictures, and they saw nothing wrong with it. They posed for me, you know. They didn't do like this or anything, but, you know. That would have been going too far. But they did wear fake dreadlocks and fake afros. And they did imitations of what they think you dance like. Uh-oh. And so I have a little cheap digital camera with me. I want to show you some of the scenes from that parade. And what happened was the mayor of central Amsterdam happened to be walking through. And somebody said, that's the mayor. So the mayor and I got involved in this sort of spontaneous debate on the streets. Unfortunately, that's not on this one, but there is a video of that also, of me and the mayor debating this whole issue. And the mayor assured me, I just didn't understand. Because, you know, outsiders just don't understand. You understand? Of course, it's a black thing. But I'm not an outsider. So I want to show you, this is some stuff from the parade. I want to show you this before we talk more about the whole basis of the modern Christmas and Santa Claus. There's Santa Claus on his white horse with his Pope hat and his cross.
I don't know, the white people are black.
Yeah. white people in blackface. Swata Pete. Those are his helpers. Yeah. Might be.
Okay,
that's good. There's more, but you get the gist. So that's in quite civilized Holland. And all liberals like Holland, because in Holland, you can go there and in the cafes, you can smoke hashish. And you can go to the red light district, where there are near nude women who are advertising themselves for sale behind glass windows. I was talking to Penny yesterday, and she was telling me she watched this movie Collateral. And in the Collateral, there was, I guess, this Mexican who was referring to a kind of Christmas thing, and he spoke of Pedro Negro, Black Pete. And I tell you, it's interesting because Black Pete takes children, he sticks them in sacks, and he takes them to Spain. Do you know why he would take them to Spain? Anybody?
The Moors.
Because Spain was occupied by the Moors, Africans, right? So-called Moors. And so yeah, I think you got a whole bunch of stuff mixed up in there, because Black Pete also gives away spices to the good people, which is what they tell us that the colonialists were looking for when they crossed the ocean. Isn't that right? And it's just interesting. And Spain also, at one juncture, dominated Holland. Did you know that? Yeah. And so that's part of the connection. Spain would be the connection to Mexico, where you would find the Pedro Negro. So I just wanted to mention that. But I wanted to say some more things about that, because there is a basis for this whole Santa Claus, and we live in societies and countries with traditions and institutions that we don't understand. In fact, people get born into situations which give the impression of having always been like that. But you can understand the ideas and institutions in a society based on the kind of society it is, the kind of social system it is, the kind of relations of production. When I mean relations of production, I mean the kinds of relationships that exist in society for the purpose of that society acquiring what it needs in the form of food, clothing, and shelter for its development. And the ideas in any society springs from that reality. There are people who actually believe that it's ideas that create reality, but in the real world, it is this reality that gives rise to certain ideas. And there is a juncture in time where we come to certain kinds of conclusions, and ideas can be important to changing this reality, but the origin of these ideas is the social reality itself. All ideas. There's no ideas born outside the context of that social reality. And as we live in societies which are dominated by class, ideas have class characters and class content. And in any society, it is the ruling class. The class that has the political and economic power is also the class that has the intellectual power. And from whence all the ideas, or most of the ideas in that society, spring. All right? So during, when you look at the Christmas as it is practiced in general, throughout the United States and throughout Europe and those places which are influenced by Europe. For example, a couple of years ago in December, I found myself in what they call South Africa. And it was shocking all over the place to see Christmas trees and Christmas lights similar to what you would find here. But there's something else about South Africa too, isn't there? That the ones who constructed the ideological a system of oppression in South Africa were who? The Dutch, from the same place that we're talking about in the Netherlands. And when I say the ideological thing, I'm talking about the whole apartheid, segregation, etc. Now, The whole capitalist system that everyone, most thinking people in this country hold up and say is wonderful, and Bush is prepared to kill, to defend, and extend around the world. And not just Bush. I shouldn't just put it on Bush. You know, it's a general population in this country. This whole system that has brought wealth to the white world in general has its origin in the first place in slavery, and has its origin in slavery and brigandage. That is to say, the theft of resources from other peoples around the world. Karl Marx, who at one juncture was held in high esteem by certain people who call themselves revolutionaries, particularly throughout Europe and North America, referred to this phenomenon as primitive accumulation of capital. In order to understand how capitalist production got started, he said that in order for there to be capitalist production, there must be a capitalist accumulation. But in order for there to be capitalist accumulation, there must also be capitalist production. So we can only get out of this situation, this weird situation, by assuming that there must have been an accumulation of capital that predated, that came before the capitalist production. And this accumulation of capital he referred to as primitive accumulation. And he talked about this being born out of turning Africa into a warren for the hunting of black skins. He referred to the internment of the Indians in North America and throughout the Americas, the so-called New World, into the mines, were bringing up silver and gold that went to Europe. Of course, there was the British attack in 1841 and 42 on China that turned China into a nation of junkies. They call it the Opium War. Forced China to become a nation of junkies. The situation when France held Vietnam for 100 years and got most of the colonial resources from Vietnam in the form of drug resources. This is the origin of the startup money that the whole capitalist system was born of. It was slavery, and the key component was slavery. Not just the tremendous amount of resources that you get when you can work somebody for free. You can just work them for free. That's one aspect of it, but the key thing was what they call the slave trade. That is to say, the trade in Africans throughout the world that created colonies throughout the world. Most of what we know in the Western Hemisphere, the so-called countries, came about as a consequence of the slave trade. When you look at Cuba, Haiti, Jamaica, when you look at Argentina, and all those places, the colonies were organized around the slave trade. And it's the slave trade that created for the first time in history a world economy that was a precondition for the rise of capitalism. And so it was the fact that Africans were being traded as slaves all around the world that created for the first time a single economy that dominated the whole world, and out of this the whole capitalist system was born. But can a society say that the reason we have all this wealth and as white people, and Indians are damn near decimated, Africans don't have nothing, and everybody else is starving, it's because we stole everything they got? The society cannot condemn itself. It will never say because we stole it. And you have all these defenders of imperialism, capitalism, who refuse, even as they know the reality. They know I didn't pop up here in America under a collard green leaf. There was a process that brought me here, and they know that it was slavery, but even that, they know that this land is the land of indigenous people. Yeah. They know that the Indians were killed and murdered and massacred and the land stolen, but they will deny a relationship between this and their wealth and my poverty. Yes. They will deny that relationship. But that is real. So they cannot say that the reason you were poor because we stole everything we got, we worked you like dogs, we worked your family like beasts. And because you had to do all the work, it meant that my children could go to school and become this and that and become inventors, and so they can steal your inventions as well. Because you had to do all of that, we were free to build universities and do all these other things. Because of what you did, we took the resources that we made from you and we put them into factories and we put them into schools. And this value that we stole from you now then is now concentrated
in IBM and Dell and all of these other resources, they can't say that to you. So what they do instead is they come up with various explanations, philosophical explanations, which become the underpinning of a society. And some of them are very serious. You know, heavyweight philosophers, Kant, and other forces like that, and they teach it in universities, but some are more subtle than that. And Santa Claus is one of them. What is Santa Claus? He is the jolly, cherubic white guy who lives in the North Pole, where it's too cold to work, who has no black people, no Africans, no Indians, no Mexicans, no Asians, or anything like that with him, but has these little dwarfs, these shorties, and all of whom are white, right? Who produce all of these resources, and he has these flying reindeers and what have you. And they just take off, and they fly all over the world. And everybody who is good, they give something. And if you ain't got nothing, it's because you weren't good. Right. So when you hear George Bush say that they hate us because we are good, you understand? He is, in his own way, telling the story of Santa Claus. And what is offered by the Christmas story is an explanation for why all the wealth and value is in the white world that they didn't work for. That they didn't work for. Nobody worked for it. It wasn't because there were people working on plantations in Brazil or in Congo where they cut off the hands of people who refused to bring in the rubber for them. It didn't come from that. It was some magic shorties. And this cherubic white guy who with the reindeers, one of whom now has, since Gene Autry, has been introduced with a red nose, right? And they fly around and give all this stuff. And that's where it came from, because we are good. And this is the explanation. This is the explanation. Let me tell you that in the 19th century, there was a movement throughout Europe, a very serious movement, because I told you just in passing, like what happened in Congo, at least 10 million Africans were killed in Congo. Congo was colonized by Belgium. Congo is 80 times larger than Belgium. And Congo is the size of India. In India, there are 1 billion people. But thanks to slavery and colonialism, there are only 50 million people, if that, left in Congo today. Maybe less than that, because in the last 5 years or so, about 5 million Africans have been killed in Congo. This is the devastating impact that colonialism has had on us. And in Congo, of course, they would do things like try to force the Africans to work in rubber plantations. They had just discovered the significance of rubber, needed them for automobile tires and things like that. And so they would force the Africans to work in the rubber plantations. And the Africans didn't want to work, so they would do things like kidnap their wives to make them go out and work. And then they would do other things like cut off the hands. Do you hear what I'm saying? They would literally cut off the hands of Africa. There are pictures showing mountains of hands that were cut off from African people to force the villagers to go and work on the rubber plantations. Now, the rubber plantations made Firestone and other major corporations around the world rich, but it devastated Congo. And this is the dialectic that we are talking about. Now, you have a situation where the first 20 Africans brought to America as captives, 1619, was that it? Yes. Were brought by the Dutch. And if they were brought by the Dutch, there is a great likelihood, and they were on the good ship Jesus, by the way, And if they were brought by the Dutch, there is a great likelihood that that ship was blessed by the patron saint, Santa Claus. So in other words, Africans in this country were a gift to the white folks from Santa Claus. That is the kind of reality that we are dealing with, and how also ideas play such a role in even trapping people in their slavery. Ideas play a profound role, and so you have these ideas born out of the kind of social system and they are there to reinforce the enslavement of a people. It reinforces it. It convinces the white people that the reason they have everything, and every white person you know, even your liberals who work at your popular community radio stations and listen to it all the time, will defend to the death the relationships that exist in this country, and will tell you that they didn't do it to you because you're black, they did it because you're a worker. Right. What's the difference in that? That's redundant. They will argue with you around this question because it is a means by which they defend this relationship that they have. So that was in Holland. But in Holland, the power of the ideas is that there were Africans who were there with that, brought their children to see this thing. Anyway, if we have anything with to do with it, it's not going to last much longer, because I was just in Paris at a meeting of the European region of these Africans who say they want to do some struggle. And we told them that we think one of the most important struggles we can engage in is to have, make an international call to Africans from around the world to come to Amsterdam next year and kick Santa Claus off that horse and introduce Holland to the real Black Pete and let him know that we mad as hell and we want everything that he took from us back. So if we have anything, and that we told them that we will come there and lead it, that we will have, we need to have an international call from Africans around the world to come and engage in civil disobedience, to say that from this day on, you will not do what you just did. If you want to have a white Pete, do it. But you are not going to do this anymore. And so that's what our objective is. And we believe... Someone said, well, if you do that, if you announce it, say, can we keep it a secret? If you keep it a secret, nobody's going to know. The people who need to get there said, but if we announce it, they'll close the borders. We say, that's all right. Let Holland close the borders. Let Holland say to the world that we want to keep black people from coming to Holland to deal with Centipede. Let Zwarte Piet. Let the world then have an opportunity to look at what Holland calls fun every year at the expense of African people. Right. Let the world see it. And if Holland can live with it, we can. Yeah, for a little bit. But anyway, I wanted to say that, I want to say that capitalism was born off a grotesquely bestial, yes, profoundly oppressive theft and of all of our resources and terrible things done to the peoples around the world. But in the 19th century, there was born a movement in Europe, because out of the things that they stole from us, you saw emerging in Europe what they call the Industrial Revolution. And white people, for the first time, were freed from serfdom and from the being stuck on the land in a feudal situation, and they now were going into the factories. In fact, the ruling class began to kick them off the land and forced them into a situation where they would have to work in the capitalist system in order to exist. They called it the Land Enclosure Acts and things like that. And so you had these white folk working in the factories, sometimes children who were being maimed in the factories, women, no rules, anything like that, working under terrible conditions. And so you had a movement among intellectuals in Europe in opposition to this capitalism as it was expressing itself there. Not to what it was doing to us in the Congo, not to what it was doing to the people in China or anyplace else, but how it was affecting white children and white women and workers there. So they came to the conclusion that they had to convince the ruling class to moderate this capitalism, make capitalism kind and gentle. And one of the intellectuals involved in this movement was a man named Charles Dickens. You familiar with Dickens?
Yeah.
Dickens is the guy who wrote the book upon which this thing that you're going to see over and over again during this period of time on television called Christmas Carols. Yeah. Christmas Carol is the story of the prototypical capitalist who is a man called Scrooge. Yeah. No, Scrooge doesn't like Christmas. People come to Scrooge and say Merry Christmas. He's the bar humbug. He's a relatively ruthless capitalist. He works his own nephew. Isn't his nephew, who is his nephew? Bob Cratchit? And there's a crippled guy, Tiny Tim, I think, who might also be a relative. And Scrooge is just horrible to everybody. And these intellectuals are trying to get the capitalist to treat the workers better. And so they use Scrooge, and then they have Scrooge goes to sleep. He must have eaten something terrible, because he goes to sleep and he wakes up with these he gets these visits from these ghosts, right? And there's Christmas past and Christmas present, Christmas future, and as a consequence of this, Scrooge the capitalist is a changed person. He likes Tiny Tim. Bob Cratchit gets the day off. I think Scrooge actually goes home with him to eat. But the thing is that it was this part of this struggle to get them to moderate capitalism that Christmas now becomes this thing where you give, where you are nice to people, etc. And Dickens wasn't the only one, but he was a part of a general movement to win the capitalists to be nice to people. And so that's the basis, that's the origin of things like Christmas Carol and what you're going to be watching on TV maybe tonight when you leave here. And if you don't see it tonight, you damn sure are going to see it between now and December 26th. And you can't help it. There's no way you're going to be able to avoid it, but that's the origin of it, and you need to know it. And what has to happen is that people who are oppressed have to construct philosophical systems in opposition to the social system that keeps them oppressed. Yes. And that's why we say, you bring us Santa Claus, and we come in to kick his butt. And that's the part of when we have another philosophy in contention with the philosophy that you just put forth. Right. And ours represent, when Santa Claus show up, we want everything in the bag because it belongs to us, you understand? And we want to go to the secret location where he got all the shorties that's supposed to be producing it because it belongs to us, you understand? And that's that we have to create our own contending philosophy that is opposed to slavery, that is opposed to colonialism, that is opposed to oppression, and that stands for the emancipation of African people and human beings on this planet and the eradication of a system of workers and bosses and slaves and slave masters. Uhuru.
Called The Truth About Santa Claus, delivered by African Socialist International Chairman Omalia Shatella to the regular Sunday community meeting of the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida on December 19, 2004. Last Sunday, Uhuru News carried a live video broadcast direct from the Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida, where delegates to the founding conference of the African People's Socialist Party, Sierra Leone, gave a report on what they witnessed of the life of the indigenous people and the liberation struggle there in West Africa. This event was the kickoff of a month-long fundraising effort to raise $10,000 to send APSP organizers into East and South Africa in the next 4 to 6 weeks. The Uhuru Movement delegation from the U.S. and Britain had traveled to Sierra Leone on the west coast of Africa in November to participate in a series of events, including the founding conference of the African People's Socialist Party, Sierra Leone, in the capital of Freetown, the introduction of an Uhuru radio FM station in the city of McKinney, the launch of a fishing project in the coastal community of Olosoro, and meetings with the community birth attendants in Allentown to plan an initiative to address the national crisis of infant and maternal mortality, Sierra Leone's being the highest in the world. The successful three-day conference launching the African People's Socialist Party, Sierra Leone, last month in Freetown, marks a new day for Africa, for African people worldwide, and for all oppressed and freedom-loving people. This is the first time that a party led by and benefiting African workers was founded on African soil with the goal of uniting African people everywhere to liberate the motherland. The demand is growing to build a party in Kenya, Guinea, South Africa, and throughout the African world. The African People's Socialist Party must now answer the calls from African people on the continent to travel to many countries to help organize similar conference there. And so, the Uhuru movement is now raising resources to send organizers to Southern and East Africa in February to consolidate and advance the movement in those areas. Uhuru Radio calls on listeners to contribute generously to this effort. From now until January 20th, you can donate online at uhurunews.com. You can also view some video footage from Sierra Leone, as well as a recording of last week's presentation by Chairman Omalia Shatella at last Sunday's event. Links to donate and to watch these dynamic videos can be found at uhurunews.com. $10,000 is needed by January 20th to send organizers to East and South Africa in February. It's urgent that African internationalism can sweep the continent and that the courageous efforts by comrades in Sierra Leone and West Africa are not isolated